I have your genes, Hiram, but I'm not you. And I never will be, no matter how you try to make it so. And as Bobby said that, links began to form in Kate's mind, as they used to as she neared the kernel of truth that lay at the heart of the most complex story. I'm not you, Bobby had said. But, she saw now, that was the whole point. As she drifted in space, Mary's mouth was open wide. Smiling, David reached out, touched her chin, and closed her jaw.
I can't believe it, she said.
It's a nebula, he said. It's called the Trifid Nebula, in fact.
It's visible from Earth?
Oh, yes. But we are so far from home that the light that set off from the nebula around the time of Alexander the Great is only now washing over Earth. He pointed. Can you see those dark spots? They were small, fine globules, like drops of ink in colored water. They are called Bok globules. Even the smallest of those spots could enclose the whole of our solar system. We think they are the birthplaces of stars, clouds of dust and gas which will condense to form new suns. It takes a long time to form a star, of course. But the final stages, when fusion kicks in, and the star blows away its surrounding shell of dust and begins to shine, can happen quite suddenly. He glanced at her. Think about it. If you lived here, maybe on that ice ball below us, you would be able to see during your lifetime the birth of dozens, perhaps hundreds of stars.
I wonder what religion we would have invented, she said.
It was a good question.
Perhaps something softer. A religion dominated more by images of birth than death.
Why did you bring me here?
He sighed.
Everybody should see this before they die.
And now we have,
Mary said a little formally.
Thank you.
He shook his head, irritated.
Not them. Not the joined. You, Mary. I hope you'll forgive me for that.
What is it you want to say to me, David?
He hesitated. He pointed at the nebula.
Somewhere over there, beyond the nebula, is the center of the galaxy. There is a great black hole there, a million times the mass of the sun, and it's still growing. Clouds of dust and gas and smashed-up stars flow into the hole from all directions.
I've seen pictures of it, Mary said.
Yes. There's a whole cluster of Stapledons out there already. They are having some difficulty approaching the hole itself. The massive gravitational distortion plays hell with wormhole stability.
Stapledons?
Wormcam viewpoints. Disembodied observers wandering through space and time.
He smiled and indicated his floating body.
When you get used to this virtual reality wormcam exploration, you'll find you don't need to carry along as much baggage as this. My point is, Mary, that we're sending human minds like a thistledown cloud out through a block of space-time 200,000 light-years wide and 100 millennia deep, across 100 billion star systems, all the way back to the birth of humanity. Already there's more than we can study even if we had 1,000 times as many trained observers, and the boundaries are being pushed back all the time. Some of our theories are being confirmed, others are unsentimentally debunked. And that's good. That's how science is supposed to be. But I think there's a deeper, more profound lesson we're already learning.
And that is?
That mind, that life itself, is precious, he said slowly. Unimaginably so. We've only just begun our search, but already we know that there is no significant biosphere within 1,000 light years, nor as deep in the past as we can see. Or perhaps there are microorganisms clinging to life in some warm, slime-filled pond, or deep in the crevices of some volcanic cleft somewhere. But there is no other Earth. Mary, the Wormcam has pushed my perception out from my own concerns, inexorably, step by step. I've seen the evil and the good in my neighbor's heart, the lies in my own past, the banal horror of my people's history. But we've reached beyond that now, beyond the clamor of our brief human centuries, the noisy island to which we cling. Now we've seen the emptiness of the wider universe, the mindless churning of the past.